welcome to another edition of the All Souls Forum here on KKFI. Tonight's program was recorded on Sunday, September the 20th, at the All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church in Kansas City, Missouri. We will have two speakers in tonight's show. Dr. Everett Murphy, who's a recently retired physician. He was in pulmonary and critical care medicine in the Kansas City area, is going to speak first. And then Kathleen Riordan, a licensed social worker whose work is guided by the Bowen Family Systems Therapy. They're going to discuss chronic illness and what accompanies that often, anxiety, and the Bowen Family Systems Theory. Our program tonight will follow its usual format. We will have about 33 minutes of the opening talk. We'll take a short break, and then we will come back with questions from the audience to wrap up the show tonight. So let's begin with the introduction, and then we will hear from Dr. Murphy first, followed by Ms. Riordan. So let us begin.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church and our UU Forum. Today, our topic is about illness and anxiety, critical illness, chronic illness, and anxiety. And often when there is chronic illness, there's anxiety with the patient, by the family, by the caregivers. There are anti-anxiety medications, but that's a short-term kind of thing. And I'll mention from personal experience, when I was in the hospital recently, they tried to give me some of those, and the first thing it did is it almost immediately made me dizzy. And so that caused more anxiety than whatever anxiety they thought that they were treating for me. Now, when we first started to plan this, it was back in like late winter, early spring, and the topic was decided then. And my first reaction was, I'm not sure this really has that much to do with me. And I was trying to think of things I dealt with. And the first thing I thought of was, well, my mother had an illness and died. My dad had died. My aunt had died. And as an adult, those were the main things I'd experienced of someone who had illness for a long time. However, about the time I was thinking this, I found there's something else that has some of the same kind of thing, and that is accidents. So with a chronic illness, you've had a long time of dealing with it. With an accident at the end of April, I went from one moment being a quite physically fit person to having my car hit on the driver's side and being crushed so badly that no one imagined that I could have survived the crash. So I went from being pretty healthy, pretty physically fit, to suddenly being someone that was supposed to not survive. As you can see, I have survived, but I have some things that will be chronic, I think. Now, we have two speakers today. The first one, professionally, is Dr. Everett Murphy. We know him as Butch. So if you know Butch, Everett and Butch are the same person. And he's a fairly recently retired physician who practiced in the Kansas City area for many, many years. And then with him, we have Kathy Riordan, who is a licensed social worker, and a lot of her work is guided by the Bowen Family Systems approach to therapy. So what we're going to do is Everett, I'm going to call him that instead of Butch. Everett is going to speak first, and then Kathy will speak.
It's a nice crowd. I wasn't sure whether it was going to be one person or Kathy and I talking to each other. Today's presentation is highlighting certain forms of intervention for emotional disorders like anxiety. It's not meant to be a promotion or a sales job for one theory versus the other. It's simply to present a dilemma that I often was confronted when I was in practice. The medical literature is full of examples of the impact of anxiety on our lives, on our health, and the quality of life. During my years of practice, I was confronted with patients and families who seemed on the surface to be inadherent, that's a new term, inadherent or noncompliant, when in spite of my efforts to treat them in a traditional way, they seemed to continue to decline or not stabilize. And only in recent years, I've begun to understand what inadherence or noncompliance really means. We use the term capacity when we look at those chronic illnesses and then how well a patient and family manages. Confronting a new illness or condition, although we don't like to acknowledge it openly, changes our lives almost instantly when we're diagnosed with it. The anxiety associated with these new conditions is often a roadblock. In these circumstances, much of the intended education and instructions seem to be ignored, at least to the physician. The patient and family would often say they didn't hear it, they didn't understand it, I'm not sure it was even discussed. And I would say that's mostly because of the anxious state that we're in when we're confronted with these issues. Let me just say a few words about a new approach. It's not yesterday. Over the past few years, I became acquainted with it when I was doing palliative care as part of my practice. We've redefined the patient unit. It's no longer just the patient. It's the patient and the family or the caregiver. And you can see that in this recent legislation with gay marriage, all this has to do with redefining who can take care of and who has responsible and legal responsibility, so it has a broad range in application. The unit of care is now not just the individual, but it's the unit of care is the patient and whoever's taking care of them. And because everybody in a relationship suffers when somebody becomes ill, whether it's mild or moderate or severe, and so if we don't take care of the unit, the new unit, then we end up with a lot of problems. Things don't go well. In reference to capacity, what I mean is, does the family unit, as well as the healthcare worker, have the tools to manage this problem? So it could be even the healthcare worker may not understand. Capacity is decreased by many things. Early dementia, financial problems, stress in the home or workplace, depression, and anxiety. In my field of pulmonary, critical care, and palliative care medicine, there was no question that capacity was altered in people who were sick. And yet, we failed to acknowledge it. We just figured, you know, it was their fault. There was something wrong with them. Helping the patient family unit manage their illness seemed to require a multifaceted approach. And in our very anxious society, we have become mindless to the psychological components to chronic illness. It makes a major difference in the quality of life for that patient family unit. So ignoring this anxiety really frustrates the healthcare worker and the patient and the family. Now, fortunately or unfortunately, Corva, my wife, and I, over the years, have been in the offices of many psychiatrists and psychologists when we were having family issues. And even though we spent all this time with a variety of different therapeutic approaches, we still had unanswered questions, searching for answers. Why was it us? What's going on? A friend referred us to Kathleen Reardon, my co-presenter today, who used the Bowen Family Systems Theory in her practice. And finally, at least for us, it may not apply to everybody, things clicked. We began to understand our situation, and we could move on and get some resolution. And what I found out is it didn't just apply to our family situation. These issues applied to me professionally, professional relationships that I had, how I understood what patients were going through, and it gave me some guidelines to at least understand it, not necessarily apply it to my practice. I found that we all function in a system, whether it's a family unit, a business, a social organization, and even a place like All Souls. Changes that redefine the organization can cause many problems and chaos, and we certainly know that here. And how we approach the change, in most cases, is dependent upon each character and what baggage they bring to the table. It could be good baggage, it could be bad baggage. When I talk about chronic illness, what I'm talking about is something that's incurable. That sounds terrible. But most chronic illnesses, as I'll describe in a moment, are there for the rest of our lives. And the intent of the physician or healthcare worker is to try to stop the rate of natural decline that may occur if it's untreated, or slow the rate of decline, or stabilize it, or actually improve it, and maybe the symptoms go away. And in healthcare, we're really treating symptoms. We cure some illnesses, but we're really trying to make the quality of life of a person better. We may not cure the problem, but we will make life a lot better. So examples of chronic illnesses first is the most obvious one for us in this hall, aging. Others include obesity, diabetes, hypertension, emphysema, cancer, chronic pain, intestinal disorders, kidney failure, just to name a few. These conditions will probably be with us for our entire life. In most cases, they bring to surface existential questions like, who am I now? Am I ever going to be the same as I was? Am I ever going to be as close to the same as I was? And is there really any reason to keep on living? It gets that bad for many people. Now, not everybody in a family patient unit needs to have counseling, psychological counseling. Many people just have the wherewithal to get through this. But for some, it may help. And it may be a small percentage in a physician's practice. What I finally realized after doing my stint as a physician, I realized I knew that much about what was going on in a patient's life outside the hospital or the office. And it had such a terrific impact, but I just knew very little. And if I had just taken a little extra time to listen, which is very important, then I might find some things out. But it wouldn't necessarily mean that I could take care of them. So the treatment was quite a conundrum. And just as, as Carolyn mentioned, I could always give a benzodiazepine, a Xanax, or an Ativan. But the benefit was so short-term, and these issues were lifelong. And for that reason, I turned to a number of consultants, one of whom is Kathleen Reardon, who would help me understand the problem and maybe intervene. And the whole point was to help to reduce this anxiety component so that the healthcare could move on. Patients could suddenly hear what I was saying, and I could, if I took time, and they would understand it and process it. And that's an extremely important thing. The medical literature shows that just after an episode of an acute bronchitis for a person with emphysema who's hospitalized, their ability to process information the day they're discharged is very poor. And so, and we all probably have experienced something like that processing. So if we can get the anxiety down somewhat, it makes a world of difference. So at this point, I want to turn the program over to Kathleen.
Good morning. Thank you so much for Dr. Murphy's invitation to come here today. I'm going to try to represent some basic components of Bowen Family Systems Theory. This theory is about human behavior in family relationships. The theory is based in evolution, biology, natural systems, and observable behavior. These are the things that Dr. Bowen used as the foundation of his work. So when Charles Darwin set out on his excursions, he wasn't setting out to prove something he already believed, but he was on a mission to collect and observe what was regarding organisms and natural systems. And likewise, Dr. Bowen wasn't out to prove something he already knew, but he was interested in collecting observations about family interactions over time. And in doing that, he was able to identify specific and repetitive patterns. He came to believe that the family system is a natural system, not unlike other natural systems in nature. And his observations that he collected were along a continuum of families with very intense, serious symptoms and those that are more typical for most of the population. And he did indeed found them to be consistent and repeating. So during the 20th century, there were primarily three ways to think about human behavior and symptoms: the medical model, Freud, psychoanalysis, and family systems. Freud's ideas have hung on since his death in 1939. They're very much with us today. And in the 1950s, there were a myriad of family therapy models. Dr. Bowen was one of these family therapy gurus. What distinguished him was his research at NIMH when he housed families on a hospital ward and followed them over a period of 4 years. These families had a member who had symptoms of schizophrenia. So he was looking at the extreme end of symptomatic families. But following that, and with that information, he observed the families in his much less intense clinical practice population. And guess what? He found the same patterns and processes of interaction and emotional process. So, if this, not to be too many words on the slide, but if you could follow across the top, the very top line going across is the unit of treatment. So in medicine, the focus of treatment is the symptom. In psychiatry, it's the individual. And in family systems, it's the family. And then if you come down a line, what is the way of thinking that guides the professional in their efforts at treatment? Well, in medicine, it's cause and effect thinking. In psychiatry, it's psychoanalysis. And in family systems, it's how natural systems function. And then the third line down is how the symptom is thought about. In medicine, the symptom is a pathology. Psychiatry, pathology. In family systems, it's seen as an imbalance in the relationship system. And then the treatment methods in medicine might consist of surgery and pharmacology, and in psychiatry, psychoanalysis, along with much pharmacology, as you all would know. And in family systems, the method is to learn the facts of the family system, the functional facts and the emotional process in the family system. What's the objective of treatment in medicine? It's to get rid of the symptom, or for sure, tone it way down. In psychiatry, the same. In family systems, it's trying to understand how the symptom functions for this family. what part it plays. And lastly, how the human is thought about. The human is typically thought about as unique, something very special, a special form of life. And in family systems, the human is thought about being very similar to all other forms of life. Not so special, not so unique, but one of many. Now, us humans, again, in this idea of uniqueness and specialty, we like to think of ourselves as highly independent and autonomous. However, no one really acts completely based on their own thinking and their own initiative all of the time. Rather, given the emotional pushes and pulls that we've all experienced and are up against in our relationship systems, we are highly emotionally interdependent. So, what's the focus of family systems? The focus is the family emotional unit. The fact that members in a family are regulated by relationships. The fact that family relationships influence an individual's and a family's behavior. Anxiety is a central variable in family systems theory. Individuals, family, and medicine deal well with acute symptoms that certainly can be accompanied by a high degree of anxiety. But more often, it's chronic, the chronicity of symptoms and anxiety that's problematic. So, acute symptoms can often be managed with surgery or medication, rehab, things like that. And the individual and the family see an end in sight. Chronic symptoms occur over time, recur over time, with more or less frequency and intensity. Family systems theory would assert the course of chronic symptoms reflects the emotional atmosphere in the important relationship system. So you have recurring episodes, sometimes exacerbation, sometimes remission. So how does family systems define anxiety? Dr. Bowen was very clear about how this term was defined, because in medicine, in society, the word anxiety can mean a whole range of things. But in family systems, it means this. It is a response to a real or perceived threat. And this level of chronic anxiety is experienced in all our families. There isn't a separation, like these families are totally free of chronic anxiety and symptoms, and these poor people have all of this load. No, no. Think of a continuum. No one, no family is exempt. But the interesting thing, theory would say, is that the anxiety is not so much caused by the event, but by the individual's and family's response to what goes on. So something gets the individual and the family vibrating, you know, worried and concerned, highly anxious. And in some families, the difficulty is dealt with and the unit calms down. In other families, it's just a turning up of the volume of the ongoing vibrating. So again, there can be certain topics and events that encourage the load of chronic anxiety individuals and families deal with. And things get passed down. This chronic anxiety gets passed down through generations. Sometimes it's shrinking by efforts of those folks, and sometimes it's building, increasing through generations. The what-ifing is a way to think about chronic anxiety. Instead of what is, we can all do the what if. What if? Oh my, what if? The vibrating. So when an event or a change or a challenge shows up, it may be real, it may be perceived. But in either event, it might be recognized as something that's manageable. Oh, I can deal with this. It's going to be okay. I can step up. I've got it. But in other individuals and families, they might act as if this is a real threat, big time threat to their ability to hang on, to survive, to get through. So how the event is perceived and reacted to is what guides the response. The variation in individuals and families as to their level of sensitivity and reactivity to what goes on is often the basis for what drives symptoms. You can see this when we think about our health and functioning, how they're affected by something surprising, upsetting that occurs. Oftentimes, before or following an important event, an important nodal event, a family member might develop a symptom, have an exacerbation, or a remission of a chronic condition. Some assumptions, theoretical assumptions regarding symptoms would be these. Symptoms are not pathology. Symptoms occur in all natural systems. They're markers of an imbalance in important relationship systems. Remissions may reflect decreasing anxiety, and exacerbations may reflect heightened anxiety. The stress response is really so important, and science is certainly doing a lot in terms of research and making hypotheses about the role the stress response has in symptoms. It's the chronic activation of the stress response that can accompany chronic symptoms. So, you know, if we're going to be bitten by a snake, we're going to get out of there. We turn on the stress response. It helps us. We are out of there. Okay, and then we down-regulate it. But in some cases and in some individuals and families, it's like they've got their foot to the gas pedal on the stress response, and they've got that down, and they're not lifting the foot. So here these stress hormones are in the bloodstream, affecting how the brain functions and everything else in regard to health. So the stress response is great. We need it. We have it. Good for that. Evolution, you know, has maintained that. But it's the business of chronic activation when there really isn't a tiger chasing us or a snake ready to bite us. That's the thing. I'll be done here in just a minute. This is a three-generation family diagram Sometimes symptoms are exhibited in different generations of a family. Family Systems is so interested in learning family facts. And so a family systems therapist will have a dry board typically and be drawing family diagrams for sure. So this imbalance in terms of how families manage the associated chronic anxiety can often show up in symptoms. In addition to anxiety, another most central concept in the theory is differentiation of self. Level of differentiation refers to the degree of solid, mature, responsible self that an individual and a family functions with. Now, individuals develop a level of differentiation in the context of their family during developmental years. Given that there are no perfect families, no perfect individuals, there's always the potential to work on increasing one's level of differentiation. This not only benefits the individual, but all those the individual relates with. Dr. Murphy used the term capacity when he was talking about the individual and the family's ability to respond to and deal with the particular symptom. Theory might say, instead of capacity, it's the individual's and family's level of differentiation. Dr. Bowen borrowed the term differentiation from biology. So solid self, this business of differentiation, it's not selfless, and it's not selfish, but it's an increased maturity, responsibility. It's lining up belief and behavior with one's own values and principles. It's work on personal goals. It's being 100% for self and 100% for the group. And just to emphasize, Family Systems Theory believes the family is an emotional unit. It is the unit of treatment. And lastly, I wanted to quote Wendell Berry. He says, the impact of education doesn't come close to the impact of family. And I'm here to say right on. Thank you.
We're listening to two speakers tonight on the All Souls Forum, Dr. Everett Murphy and Kathleen Riordan. And we're at that point of the program where we're going to take a short break. We've got some vital messages for you, and we shall return with questions from the audience for both Dr. Murphy and Kathleen Riordan. You're listening to the All Souls Forum here on KKFI. Stay with us. We'll be right back after these.
And we are going to come in for a couple minutes and make the case for community radio, and because we are in our fall fund drive. My name is Mike Murphy, and joining me here is Dr. Everett Murphy, one of the featured speakers on tonight's program. And he wanted me to make it clear that he's no relation to me. But thank you so much, Doctor, for coming in this evening and helping make the case for community radio.
Mike, it's a pleasure on my part. You know, the forum at All Souls has been going on for years, and fortunately for KKFI, we get to hear it at least once within a couple of weeks. And so many people have told me that one I did a few years ago on palliative care, they were enjoyed it so much, and it was an opportunity. If they missed the presentation, they could always listen to it on the station. And that's why community radio, and specifically KKFI, is so important to Kansas City and the areas around it. I'm involved with a upstart community radio in Fayette, Missouri, through a group called the Howard County Progressives. And it's very, very small. It's probably smaller than when KKFI started, but I know how difficult it is, but how important it is, because the stations don't cover the issues that we as a community really need to hear about and want to hear about. And so for that reason, support to institutions, and it is an institution, KKFI, makes a world of difference to the survival of our city and state.
Yeah, well said. And if you agree with Dr. Murphy, we'd ask you to pick up that phone right now and make that contribution to your community radio station. Step up and take some ownership of KKFI. That number to call is 888-931-0901. We do have some as a thank you gift, if you contribute at the $75 level or more, we have still have a few copies of The Essential Van Morrison, a 2-CD set, courtesy of Legacy Recordings. At the $90 level, there's the KKFI long sleeve T-shirt, and there's also the holiday. There's the KKFI Hoedown on October 17th. The Knuckleheads, a pair of tickets to that, or a pair of tickets to the Halloween extravaganza, also at Knuckleheads on Halloween. Those are all at the $90 level. At the $150 level, there's the guest DJ. For 1 hour, you can be a guest DJ in one of our music programs. At the $200 level, it's the combo. You can get the guest DJ and the T-shirt, or the guest DJ and the hoedown, or the Halloween tickets. And so we'd love to get some calls right now at 888-931-0901. You know, you mentioned how people are miss the presentation at All Souls. They can hear it later on the radio. Well, now, if you miss it on the radio, we now have it podcast. And almost 1,400 people have downloaded the presentation that Richard Wolf did when he was here a few weeks ago. And that was just, we just aired that last week. So that's great. So, yeah, that's great. What was it like speaking there? Would you?
Well, it's a little. I had some anxiety about it, because you never know whether the subject that I was preparing to to deliver along with Kathleen Reardon was going to be something people wanted to listen to. But surprisingly, people were asking for a second chapter. My wife Corbin and I have been members at All Souls since 1991, and the forums have just been a phenomenal broadening experience for us. And again, especially since we can hear it on KKFI, it makes a world of difference. When I did on palliative care, I got a call from a palliative care physician who just happened to have KKFI on, and said that, and about the time it was going to be broadcasted, and they said, "Gee, I ought to listen to that." And so I think it's a great event. You know, we have all kinds of people there. The mayor comes once a year to present his, and there are a lot of social issues discussed. But again, it's nice that we can have it broadcasted here.
So this is your opportunity. We're going to get back to the Q&A in just a minute or so, but we would like to get those phones to ring at 888-931-0901. We've got Mark and Beth and Bill anxious to take your call, 888-931-0901. If you contribute at the $75 level, the Essential Van Morrison, a 2-CD set, courtesy of Legacy Recordings. Again, that number is 888-931-0901. And so you're familiar with KKFI, and you're also familiar with the Fayette Community Radio Station, this upstart. You think community radio is something worth supporting?
It's vital, because on standard radio, whether it's National Public Radio or on the standard commercial radios, there's so many pressures on them that we don't have here. And we're able to broadcast things that people want to hear and they're afraid to talk about. And so it's for some people, it's a little frightening to listen to it, but for most of us, it's a way of broadening our experience. And if we didn't have community radio, we would not be able to hear these things. It's so important.
That's right. I always refer to it as widening the spectrum of what's allowable to be discussed. And so we're going to get back to the forum, but we do need the phones to ring. That number is 888-931-0901, 888-931-0901. You can contribute online as well at kkfi.org, but we really love it when those phones ring, 888-931-0901.
This question is for both our presenters. It seems to me that all of this places an enormous burden on both the physicians and also social workers. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about how case management might enter into this and make a more positive and constructive and organized method of dealing with all of this.
I've always said the two most important people in the hospital are the housekeeping people and the social workers. Because without the social workers, nothing really gets done. My practice, we, at least in palliative care, we had a team, including a social worker, a physician, a nurse practitioner, physical therapist, and then a chaplain. And it was extremely important for us to understand what was going on outside the hospital, because clearly, especially in most of the things we dealt with was life-ending events that could occur within 6 months, potentially. And so if we didn't, the caseworker, social worker, would be there to listen. But once we were through with our hour session of listening, then the social worker then would proceed to interview and explore resolutions. And so that's why I said they were the most important part of that team. I think without that team effort, things don't get done. I mean, it's very sloppy. It's crisis management, which never works. Does that answer some? Yes.
Is this adequately covered by health insurance?
Today, most insurance has a mental health. Most individuals' insurance has a mental health or behavioral health component. And yes, so if somebody comes to the practice, to private practice, mine or anybody's, any mental health professional, then they can certainly ask the person if they're a participating provider in whatever the insurance is that the individual has.
A question I was wondering about is, as you all know, in the last 25 years, we've seen an enormous broadening of thinking about systems and systems theory, and from every scale that you can imagine, from nanoparticles to the universe. But one of the phenomenon that I think bears on gaining the benefits of these lessons learned is the explosion of social media and the creation of these very, very large communities of practice where it seems that we're actively working against differentiation and towards a loss of it. So I wonder, is there work going on either in the healthcare, particularly hospital world, or in the family systems theory up to sort of try to get your arms around what the heck is really going on? Because I hang around with a lot of young people who spend a lot of time on social media, and frankly, it seems like we're losing ground.
Well, I do think, and Dr. Bowen thought, we're living in a time of societal regression, and the challenge is to, as opposed to joining the group think, is to represent oneself as an individual. So, you know, it feels cozy and all this warm togetherness that we all and we, you know, everything. But different from that is to think for self and put those beliefs, values, and principles in charge of one's behavior. So it is a challenge. There are different what do you call it, not chat rooms, but different sites where Bowen theorists are talking back and forth, and that is on social media. Also, there's a program, Family Matters, that's broadcast by the Bowen Center in Washington, D.C., and they have different programs ongoing. So there's benefits, but I do think the challenge is to think for self.
I recognize what you say about chronic anxiety, because in my family, there were five children and then two parents, and when we were in the family car and my father missed a turn, life was over as we knew it, you know. And it's taken me a very long time to at least minimize the effect on myself, and I hope there's hope to eradicate that response. But my question is, because I've experienced two cases of hospice care, my mother was in hospice care at home. I, my two sisters, and my brother did provide at-home care, but it was pretty rocky. And then also, it was rocky for us, the siblings providing the care. And then my sister, one of the two sisters had breast cancer, and I and the other sister would travel to California at different times to care for her. So I am keenly aware of how hospice care needs to incorporate this theory into care and guidance for the family. And what do you have to say about if there's any hope that hospice could do a better care? Case, do a better care.
One of the things I do is teach in a nonprofit that I co-founded in 96, and that is the Kansas City Center for Family Systems. And it's been interesting because through the years, trainees who participate in this come from a wide range of backgrounds. But we have had some hospice workers and administrators participate, and then when they go back to their particular hospice, you know, they can influence that. But there's great variation in who families get in terms of a hospice worker, in terms of anything, you know, in terms of a therapist, a doctor. There's great variation. So these ideas are out there, but not consistently across disciplines.
I would agree that in hospice, although it's a great concept, I agree with the variability, and if you just talk to 10 people, you're going to talk about 10 different experiences. Not that everybody should go to an inpatient unit. It seems there's more consistency when you're on an inpatient hospice unit as opposed to an outpatient. But it is important, from what Kathy mentioned about developing the self, not just in the patient, because their ability to process that is diminished, but for the caregivers, when they have a good sense of self, then they can direct the hospice worker in a way that they may be more fashionable to their needs. And often asking those of us that ask for hospice help want them to answer all our questions for us, just give us some dogma. I don't want to participate, just tell me what to do. Do I give them A, B, or C? And so then the hospice worker gets into that pattern where they just say, okay, call me here, don't call me here, take that pill. But I think as we develop a better self-image or self-definition, as Corbett would say, can direct the hospice worker and things work out a lot better. That's where I said when I was giving my comments that this seemed to click with me. Suddenly I realized how important it was for me to represent myself.
Hi, this is for you, Butch. Have you been able to show, I don't know how long you've been using the team approach to care, but have you been able to show better outcomes with the team approach as opposed to the physician, patient?
The team approach is not unique to palliative care, although it is a standard of palliative care, and the team members I mentioned, those four or five people, have been recognized by the society to be extremely important, that each person offers an improved outcome. Now, I can't give you the data on that, and that's been looked at in the palliative care literature. The only thing I can say in medical, non-palliative care, in the critical care unit, we started in our group and finally ended up at Olathe Medical Center. We started a team approach in the ICU, and every day we made team rounds, which included all the disciplines that could be involved in that one individual's care, because we recognized that that so many people had stuff to offer that I didn't as a physician didn't even think about. And so it is a standard of care in all ICUs now that they have a team rounds, which may last up to 2 hours on, say, 20 patients, making sure that everybody was offering their best and that we were communicating. So we as individuals, not to belabor the point, would define ourselves. We know I knew what I knew, and then everybody else would represent themselves in this, and then we'd come up with a consensus approach for each day. So, yes.
I love you, Butch.
I love you, too.
He knows what I'm about to talk about. My name is Fred Newman. What I'm about to say and the question I'm going to ask comes from a conversation that Kendall and I have been having about family systems. I have 25 years of being the research associate to several family systems research projects. And when she first mentioned family systems and what her views were, I said, boy, that doesn't align with my views. So I went into the literature and started looking for, and I also served on the American Psychological Association's panel that developed evidence-based practice standards for the American Psychological Association. Given that background, I'm sorry I'm talking so long, I went into the literature and consulted with the editors of family therapy journals, and I said, what empirical evidence is there for Bowen family systems? And I kept on getting a response of, other than the observational things that Bowen did back in the, what was it, 60s, there's no empirical evidence that meets the standards of evidence-based practice. And so in about 3 weeks of working with those sorts of things, I'm not finding any evidence-based practice that meets the standards of at least the American Psychological Association, American Psychiatric Association, and or even the American Medical Association. So I'm hoping you would help me learn something more on this. Have you?
Okay, I just make one comment. It's my understanding that there is hardly one form of psychotherapy that is evidence-based.
No, that's not true. William Sharish did across a lot of family therapies and found a moderate, efficacious effect of family therapies, but there were no studies of Bowen's that were done. But in the others, they have found 25 studies that have shown efficacious in family systems, and in interpersonal, they find a moderate effect in for anxiety and cognitive behavior therapy. They find a very strong effect that equals that of medication.
Well, your work to learn what underpins the various schools and ways of thinking, that's impressive and good for you. Dr. Bowen observed processes and patterns that repeated at different levels of intensity across the span of all the family systems he worked with. He identified 8 concepts. Don't have time today, didn't have time to do those, but the 8 concepts each would be evidenced in families and living systems. One of the things that he repeatedly said is, this is as far as I can take it over his years of work before he died in 1990. And the charge to anybody that was going to get into this family systems business was to hold up what he had found so far to the ongoing findings in science, and where it didn't hold up, match up, he said, set it aside, throw it out, stick with what is consistent across all living natural systems. And that is the thing I've had my eye to over 20 years, and I'll still be watching. I'll still be watching for where it doesn't line up.
Would you address both the challenges and advantages to treating chronically ill patients who do not have family?
You know, sometimes someone will come into the office and I'll say, let's visit about your family. Who do you relate with? I don't have any. I don't have any. They all died. I was adopted and moved to Africa and whatever. But us humans find individuals to relate with on the planet. And so maybe it isn't the biological parents that are available or being interacted with, but there are important people. And so we'll start wherever the individual is in regard to that.
Well, in my limited experience in healthcare, and the worst thing you hear a physician say is, in my experience, because it's all anecdotal and means nothing. Large studies are most important. But we always found there were caregivers, and it could be a neighbor. And so we just tried to identify the caregiver, who that would be. And that was, as was asked or mentioned earlier, that was why we depended so heavily on the social worker to find these things out. I just can't emphasize too much how important they are.
Wanted to know what you do with this besides medication. And one thing I think you do with it, you learn that word reactivity, and how your family is buzzing, humming, and anxiety is just getting higher and higher. That word really meant something to me. I didn't realize what was happening in our family. You know, here was this anxiety, and we were reacting to it. And it was just getting out of hand. So unless you can recognize that, you can't do anything about it. That's what Bowen Family Systems helps you do, is recognize that symptom and learn the tools to work with reactivity lower. Because it's really harmful to a family.
For the radio audience, that is Clover Murphy.
This is going to have to be a very, very quick question and quick answer.
Okay. I'm Mark Richards. I'm a chaplain at St. Luke's. And I have a special interest in prisons. So I'm curious to know how Bowen's family systems might be applied to an environment where anxiety is intentionally applied for the purpose of control. And maybe that's a question for the library.
We've just heard Dr. Everett Murphy and Kathleen Riordan talking about chronic illness, anxiety, and what you do about it. And a very enlightening show, because this is something we're all going to have to encounter in our lifetimes. This program was recorded on Sunday, September the 20th, at the All Souls Forum at the All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church on 4501 Walnut Street in Kansas City, Missouri. This program is edited and produced for broadcast by Barry Lee. Thank you to Rita Norton and the staff at All Souls who provide us with the recordings each week for this program. This program is also podcast on the KKFI website at www.kkfi.org. We have a number of archived programs from the All Souls forums there, as well as other remarkably good public affairs programs from KKFI. So check it out if you get the chance. We'll return again next week, same time, same place, same station. The music you're hearing in the beginning and ending of the show is composed and performed by local artist Fred Potter. See you again next week.